The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 1:31 a.m., August 29th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Grab him by the pussy.
Resist!
Hello. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of the Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of the Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly the Voice. This may be a little bit of a cynical episode. First off, I want to wish everybody well in Texas. Try to stay safe, try to stay dry. The rain continues, and we need to remain clear on a few points. This storm would probably have occurred regardless of climate change, but the storm traveling over warmer than usual waters made things exponentially worse. It seems clear that climate change strengthened Hurricane Harvey in two major ways, by intensifying the rainfall associated with the storm and creating larger and more dangerous storm surge along the coastline. Or so the experts say.
You know, science.
Think Progress makes the point that response to climate change is often divided into two actions. Mitigation, or taking steps to reduce the amount of climate-changing greenhouse gas emissions are released into the atmosphere, and adaptation, or taking steps to adapt society to the consequences of inherent climate change. Harvey is an example of what happens when neither mitigation or adaptation are implemented effectively. If anything, Houston, a low-lying city with vulnerability to water, has done exactly the opposite. Over the last 25 years, the city has lost almost 50% of its wetlands to development. Outside the environmental tragedy, the wetlands traditionally serve as a kind of natural flood barrier. They absorb rainfall. Instead, as Talking Points Memo points out, Houston has become an impenetrable expanse of pavement. 30 parking spots for every one resident. And according to ProPublica, the city has paved over 166,000 acres, mostly coastal prairie, in just the last decade and a half. Houston has also prioritized development over flood protections. I know that the South believes regulations are born of the devil, but isn't putting human beings in harm's way something evil too? More than 7,000 residential buildings have been built in FEMA-designated floodplains since 2010 in Harris County, which includes Houston. I want everyone listening to be bold when speaking of climate change during this tragedy. Be bold. This is a chance to make it clear that this suffering has been compounded by climate change and more. Our friend Naomi Klein of The Intercept wrote, quote, "Now is exactly the time to talk about climate change and all the other disasters like Harvey to human catastrophes. The disaster capitalism that this country is so fond of is at hand."
Underwater, here in New Orleans tonight, after the giant storm came the rising waters. Over 80% of the city is flooded.
Disaster capitalism is what we saw in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and other catastrophic events. The exploitation of crisis for the corporate gang, often under the guise of relief or reconstruction efforts. Our vice president and man who finds the Bible too erotic, Mike Pence, headed up a group that saw the severe flooding as an opportunity to make the entire affected area a flat tax-free enterprise zone, give school choice vouchers for displaced children while firing all the teachers, and make the entire region a, quote, economic competitiveness zone. Basically, a comprehensive tax incentives and waiving regulations zone. They even went so far as to waive paying laborers a living wage. They privatized all services and did things like they wouldn't allow volunteer morticians to help collect bodies, yet the company they were paying absurd amounts of money to do it, in the end, didn't know what the hell they were doing, so the bodies languished and blistered in the heat. We must be loud and aware the recovery and rescue efforts continue. The poor communities will be the hardest hit and the most taken advantage of. Already in Houston, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development subsidized at least 8 low-income housing projects located within the designated floodplain. And taxpayers will be footing the bill for whatever agency or private entity is chosen to rebuild.
If they're chosen to rebuild.
And it will come at the expense of other social programs and services the right has been dying to cut nationwide. And then there's the exploitation of the situation and of the people. While the shelters supposedly were open to undocumented immigrants, I would understand them not wanting to go to such shelters or call for help when they needed it most. Texas has a large population of undocumented immigrants, and Customs and Border Protection has continued to operate roadside checkpoints within 100 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border during the evacuation. They'll only close a checkpoint if the hurricane's path or the highway it's on is closing. So, sure, feel free to come and shelter. Come get food and water, but we'll arrest you on your way there.
This seems exceptionally cruel.
I don't know. If one good thing is to come out of this, maybe this hurricane will shake awake our president, who has proposed cuts to FEMA's $3.5 billion budget, would lose $361 million under the spending plan the White House submitted to Congress in March. The Coast Guard's $9.1 billion budget for the fiscal year that starts October 1st would be cut too by 14%. So be loud. Stay knowledgeable. Absolutely politicize this moment. We have to keep an eye out for militarized police, more oil and gas infrastructure in the name of reconstruction, and privatized services. There's a moral imperative for informed, caring persons such as ourselves to call out the real root causes behind the crisis and be clear about the connections between climate pollution, systemic racism, underfunding of social services, and overfunding of police. We also need to seize the moment and lay out intersectional solutions, ones that dramatically lower emissions while battling all forms of inequality and justice. The right, of course, is condemning us for politicizing this moment, but our window is short to make our point with the same attention and proof of impact.
This is about Donald John Trump, a man who is filth.
Hugh Hewitt. Ugh, the infuriating Hugh Hewitt, who manages to light up Twitter every time MSNBC inflicts him on us with calls for his firing. So Hugh had this to tell us. Quote, some advice for my colleagues in the media. Be very slow to politicize this storm. It looks to be quite awful in its impacts. The pull of domestic politics generally, and the president specifically on every story, is so strong these days that it takes great intentionality to not make this an occasion for another round of Trump trashing or boosterism. Unquote. Also chiming in was the ever-charming Sheriff David E. Clark.
You suck!
Who tweeted, quote, deranged lib left is soiling their underwear in excitement of politicizing Tropical Storm Harvey to use against that real Donald Trump, unquote.
Filth.
Well, gentlemen, your deity beat you to it. Your lord? Your king? What? I don't know. What do you guys call him these days? You see, there was this little hurricane hitting the U.S. that was larger than we've seen in over a decade, and our demander and tweet chose to officially deliver the memo on implementing the transmilitary ban and chose to initiate a possible constitutional crisis by pardoning a terrorist, a murderer, a rape enabler, a racist bigot responsible for modern-day concentration camps. Not my words, his.
I already have a concentration camp.
He pardoned the vile scumbag Joe Arpaio and pardoned the irredeemable creature during a Category 4 hurricane because, as he said,
I assume the ratings would be far higher than they would be normally.
You can't write this crap. And you know why you can't write this crap? Because it would be bad writing. Bad goddamn writing. I had thought that I would enumerate the ways in which Arpaio deserves to die in the same fashion to which he condemned so many people in his concentration camps to die sweating in 140 degree temperatures, humiliated, broken, starving, beaten, because I am not the turn-the-cheek kind of girl. But I'm too mad, and the information is out there in abundance. It's just, it's the message it sends to law enforcement that's so bad. It says, you can abuse all you want. The law has no standing as long as you are abusing the right people. People are hurting over this. Me, I'm pissed. But I wasn't the target of his action. But the people he abused, or the families of those who died or who killed themselves, or those who were raped, or those who were swept up in his illegal raids, or lived in fear of his racist and illegal searches, they won't even see this little bit of justice. And yes, it is crap that he was only facing 6 months, and that he wouldn't have even gone to jail for.
Probably.
But at least it was something. It was something. Again. No. I am not surprised by this. I've said it before. I'll say that as a blanket statement for anything this man does. I am not surprised, but I am righteously pissed off. And it bothers me that more people aren't. Too many people are happy to say, I'm not surprised, turn the channel. At some point, people need to snap out of it and realize that their dismayed head shake is not enough to stop injustice. This pardon during a hurricane on top of a trans-military ban is mere party favors to the party from hell our president has planned for us. And that is why we resist in big ways and in small. That is why I refuse to allow myself to not be outraged by this government. It is the least cynical choice I have made in a long time, and I will make it despite how naive it may make me seem. It is fuel for my resistance, and I sure as hell am not burned out yet. So get ready, you Trump administration. So get ready, GOP.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. And now we know exactly what Trump meant by make America great again. Make it great for the racists, the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis. Make it great for the anti-Semites. Make it great for those entrusted to enforce the law, who break the law, and who persecute Hispanics. Make it great for presidents who tweet about building a wall to keep out Mexicans, while a city with 36% Latino and 27% Mexican heritage population and the nation's ninth largest African-American population, while that city is drowning. Make it great for the homophobic. Make it great for those too stupid to understand who transgendered people are. Make it great for those who must hate others. Make America great again, which means make America white again.
Okay, with that, let's get on with some of resistance news.
It's immoral to try and take health care from your mama because you don't like Obama.
Religious leaders and congregants rallied on Monday in Washington to say the soul of the nation is at stake. Leaders from multiple faiths near the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial said that it's not about politics, it's about the moral corrosion of a country that they believe has become increasingly evident under the presidency of Darth Vader. They called it the 1,000 Ministers March for Justice rally, organized by the Reverend Al Sharpton's National Action Network. A rabbi, Jonah Pinsker, said, quote, "We will not be indifferent when transgender individuals are not allowed to serve in the military. We will not be indifferent when a sheriff is pardoned." Unquote. The Dallas Morning News reports that the Mexican government, despite it all, is on our side and expressed its solidarity on Sunday with the United States following the damage caused by Hurricane Harvey and offered assistance to Texas. They offered assistance to Texas as, quote, "good neighbors should always do in trying times," unquote. 12 years ago, following Hurricane Katrina, Mexico sent troops and a vessel filled with food, medicine, and water to aid victims in New Orleans. This, and on Sunday, our fearless leader, just kidding, our fearful leader, tweeted, quote, "With Mexico being one of the highest crime nations in the world, we must have the wall. Mexico will pay for it through reimbursement / other," unquote. As always, the ACLU is in the resistance. The BBC reports that the ACLU has filed a legal challenge to our dickhead president's directive banning transgender service personnel. The case was filed on behalf of 6 serving transgender members of the armed forces. The petulant bigot-in-chief signed a memo to reinstate a ban on transgender people serving on Friday. After announcing it on the electric Twitter machine last month, the policy, of course, was lifted by President Barack Obama's administration last year. The ACLU argues that the ban is discriminatory and violates constitutional guarantees of equal protection. It described the ban as cruel, being based on myths and stereotypes, and desired to harm transgendered people.
Which, of course, it is.
Never forget that the main force behind President Dumbass's push on this new legislation was Mike Pence, the kid in Catholic school that thought the uniforms were too slutty. The boys' uniforms, that is. According to government documents published by one of Murdoch's newspapers Tuesday,
The Australian
authorities denied the bid by our president to build a casino in 1988 due to his ties to the mafia and organized crime. So, there's that. Australian authorities simply couldn't stomach the alleged mob ties, and yet we elect him president. Fantastic. So the National Park Service reversed a ban on plastic water bottles at national parks. The move came after the confirmation of Trump's Deputy Interior Secretary, who previously represented Deer Park Water. The Weather Channel reports that the rules were first put in place in 2011 after it became clear that discarded water bottles were becoming a big problem at national parks. The policy did not stop the sale of bottled sweetened drinks. We have an update on a previous story. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions' DOJ had ordered DreamHost, the web provider, to hand over all files related to DisruptJ20.org, a website created by one of its customers to plan and announce actions intended to disrupt Donald's inauguration. The DOJ had already served a warrant and received the email address and physical addresses of the creators from the site DreamHost. But in July, the government issued a new warrant that asked for additional materials, which were all files, databases, and database records related to DisruptJ20's website. DreamHost called this a gross overreach and has been fighting it. Well, score one for the good guys. TechCrunch reports that the Department of Justice has dropped its request for the IP addresses of visitors to the anti-Trump inauguration protest website. The news is a win for the resistance and for DreamHost, which went public with the situation last week, riling privacy advocates who decried the DOJ's request for IP addresses that had visited DisruptJ20.org as dangerously broad. In its reply to the court, the Justice Department modified its request to leave out information that it claims it didn't know DreamHost had to begin with, namely the 1.3 million IP addresses in question,
including yours truly's.
The DOJ asked the court to exclude any text and photographs from the unpublished blog post it hosted. For its part, DreamHost will continue on as planned. In the blog post titled Narrowing the Scope, DreamHost cheered its privacy win while preparing to argue, quote, the remaining First and Fourth Amendment issues raised by this warrant, unquote.
You win!
Its court date is set for this week. So our Secretary of Defense, James Mad Dog Mattis, had this to say to a small group of soldiers.
You're a great example for our country right now. It's got some problems. You know it and I know it. It's got problems that we don't have in the military. And you just hold the line, my fine young soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines. You just hold the line until our country gets back to understanding and respecting each other and showing it, of being friendly to one another. You know, that Americans owe to one another. We're so doggone lucky to be Americans. And we got two powers, the power of inspiration, and go get the power of inspiration back. We got the power of intimidation, and that's you if someone wants to screw with our families and our country or our allies, okay?
So a small win for sanity. The neo-Nazi Sebastian Gorka was fired as advisor to our neo-Nazi president, so... Sadly, however, his wife remains. Catherine Gorka, who The Intercept calls a controversial national security analyst and anti-Muslim activist, has been named as an advisor to the Department of Homeland Security's policy office.
Well, isn't that special?
During Barack Obama's presidency, Gorka extensively criticized DHS for teaching employees, wrongly in her view, that Islam is a religion of peace. HuffPost reported on Gorka's role in helping to pool DHS funding for Life After Hate, a group dedicated to countering neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Can someone remind me, how long ago was Charlottesville? Can we be more on the nose? It's also worth noting that the State Department's Anti-Semitism Monitoring Office was shuttered. Anyways, Life After Hate is a great organization. Their website says that Life After Hate is dedicated to inspiring individuals to a place of compassion and forgiveness for everyone, including themselves. Life After Hate is a U.S. nonprofit and created in 2011 by former members of the American Violent Far-Right Extremist Movement. Through powerful stories of transformation and unique insight gleaned from decades of experience, we serve to inspire, educate, guide, and counsel. Should you like to donate to their cause, as they are now defunded, you can go to their site at lifeafterhate.org. I also have the link on my Facebook page at K Voice of Resistance. Raising ethical concerns, Justice Gorsuch is scheduled to address conservative groups at Trump Hotels D.C. in September, less than 2 weeks before the court will hear arguments on the Muslim ban. The great white Christian hope, Neil Gorsuch, Supreme Court Justice sitting in the stolen Merrick Garland seat,
damn you Republicans,
plans to bless the Republicans next month with a soulful oration at the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. Seriously, what a banana republic. On September 26th, we celebrated the day in 1920 that women in the United States finally won the right to vote.
Well, at least white women won the right to vote.
A historic victory in the long march towards equal rights. Almost a century later, women play an outsized role in the economy. Women make up half of the workforce and drive roughly 80% of consumer purchases, yet women have limited access to the fruits of their labor. According to Robert Reich, it is well known that women earn 79 cents for every dollar earned by men. But most people don't realize that women own only 32 cents on the dollar compared with men. To get to women's equality, we have to tackle the income and wealth inequality. Measuring wealth is a much more accurate picture of how one is doing financially than measuring wages. Wealth is a balance of assets minus debts. Several factors contribute to the wealth gap facing women. In the workforce, women make less money than men, hurting their ability to save. Women also are more likely to pursue part-time work because often they're caring for family members, which limits access to employer benefits and help turn income into wealth through 401ks and other retirement savings programs. And women often can't access federal and state tax subsidies that encourage savings and investments because of the way the subsidies are structured. To address these unique inequities, we need a broad menu of solutions that addresses income and wealth. Unfortunately, this will need to be done with policy, and that policy won't happen till we get our people in Congress, and the Senate, and eventually the White House again. So let's keep pushing for 2018 and 2020, because we have a lot of work to do in this country. Okay, guys, we have a call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
So our president is an idiot, and on many things, he's just plain pig-headed. Our president doesn't believe in the science of human-caused climate change. He wants to ignore one of the greatest threats to healthy life on Earth. Donald wants to inhale coal like John Belushi sucked down cocaine. Health risk be damned. Scientists say that we cannot afford to burn it, and economists say that there's more money to be made and more jobs available in renewable energy. Well, there's a group planting a forest to soak up the extra greenhouse gases our genius president plans to put into the atmosphere. As the group says, quote, "We're planting a global forest to offset Trump's monumental stupidity," unquote. They're calling it Trump Forest.
Hashtag Trump Forest.
You can check out their site at TrumpForest.com. This is how it works. They're not asking for any money. They want us to pay for and plant a tree anywhere in the world and plant it in the name of Donald Trump and then send a receipt to them so that they can add the generous contribution to the global Trump Forest map. Or we can easily make a direct contribution to their partner, Eden Reforestation Projects, at edenprojects.org. So far, 463,722 trees have been pledged, $60,002.85 have been invested, and 1,644 people have backed them. So today's call to action is to donate or plant a tree. And at the very least, you can go to TrumpForest.com and share their page with the hashtag TrumpForest to spread the word. See how easy it can be to be in the resistance? So before I go, I need to say something. Hillary's book is coming out. It's called What Happened. And regardless of whether you like her, love her, or hate her, she gets a say. She gets to tell her side of things. And to any man, or woman for that matter, who chooses not to believe her when she gets to the part of her book where she describes how she felt during the debate where Donald was stalking her and invading her personal space, you need to check yourself. In her book, she describes her moment as this, quote, "It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. It was one of those moments where you wish you could hit pause and ask everyone watching, well, what would you do? Would you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, back up, you creep! Get away from me! I kept my cool, aided by a lifetime of dealing with men trying to throw me off. Unquote. Chris Matthews of Hardball on MSNBC questioned if Donald really made her skin crawl, then went on to describe how he would have reacted, saying that he would just turn around and get in his face. I can't speak for all women, but I can speak for many. Watching that made our skin crawl. And we weren't even there. I dare anyone, male or female, to suffer a taller, stronger, heavy-breathing person standing in their personal space directly behind him. We won't even say in this scenario that that person is a known sexual predator. On the sheer proximity issue, I dare anyone to not have their skin crawl. We would be hard-pressed to find a woman who has not been stalked in such a way by a man who made her skin crawl. It is something women know well. It is important to our survival that our skin serve as a warning light, the threat looms. Women instinctively know that the majority of men, if they so chose, could overpower her. It is hard to overstate the feeling that one gets when a man looms maliciously. It is visceral, stomach-turning, and it sets hairs on end. It turns reason on end. I don't care if anyone who hears her anecdote thinks they would act differently in her situation. It doesn't make you any better than her. No one gets to tell a woman in a moment like that what she should have done any more than they get to tell a rape victim that they should have fought harder. And no one gets to doubt how she felt any more than they get to question if a rape victim wanted it or encouraged it. No one. Here's Hillary Clinton.
Maybe I have overlearned the lesson of staying calm, biting my tongue, digging my fingernails into a clenched fist, smiling all the while, determined to present a composed face to the world.
Okay, guys, that's about all the time I have for today. I will be less cynical next episode. Maybe. One of the things I forgot to mention is, unsurprisingly, Donald has decided to remilitarize our police officers. We need to push back on this. It may seem like a hopeless cause, but we need to push back. Okay, thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's one word, crabdiving.com, under the K-Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth, that's citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice, or on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. All right, take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.
Resist!
To play us out, Joe Kennedy, House Democrat from Massachusetts, as he speaks about the transmilitary ban.
Our soldiers do not discriminate. They do not offer to pay the ultimate sacrifice for some Americans and not for others. Their government owes them that same courtesy, that same decency in return. Instead, this morning, our president has told thousands of American soldiers that they will fight for us, but we will not fight for them. That their deeply personal medical decisions are somehow the public's business. That although they are willing to sacrifice their lives to protect our freedom, we will not offer them the most basic freedom in return. Today, the President of the United States looked American soldiers in the eye and dared to question their patriotism, their courage. He doubted their commitment to the brothers and sisters in uniform. He said that our military couldn't or wouldn't stand for all of us. To the thousands of brave transgender men and women serving today in uniform, please know that a grateful nation does not take your service, your patriotism, for granted. You deserve better from your president. You deserve better from your government. You deserve better from your country. Thank you, and I yield back.